First of all, thank you for inviting us to Hilton Head. We've both been here before, and this is, I got to tell you, this beats every church camp in Texas, doesn't it, huh? We got off the plane, and we were met by Cindy in a brand new Cadillac, and I thought, ah, yes, Hilton Head. This is really where I belong, here. And so it's been great. And the conference so far has been wonderful. I've always enjoyed John. I've never heard him better. And, of course, his wife after that, who said those untrue and terrible things about him. And I feel sorry for you, John. And Keith is one of the most marvelous speakers in all of AA. And I'm delighted to have been here to be with him. And, of course, last night we had the friendly girl. And I must tell you, I've been her best friend for a long time. And I'm happy about that. And so we're glad to be here. So thanks for inviting us back. And you intrepid souls who've shown up for this. This conference is all wonderful. It's like a constant dessert, isn't it? Well, now you're going to have the medicine. This is the medicine now, this period of time. So we're going to talk to you about money. And if any of you are here think that money is a problem, you're wrong. It's not your problem. You use it as an answer. That's what's wrong with money. It has nothing to do with the problem with money. It has to do with the problem with you. And you take money to purchase your way out of it. And that's what this is. That's what I've learned about me and what I've learned about you after a lot of years. Now, I'll tell you very briefly how we started doing this kind of work in AA. About 20 years ago, in my office on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, a young couple in our group showed up to talk to me. And they were just a really cute kids. They were... Every group has a couple like this, right? She's pretty and he's smart and, you know, and they're just so precious. And they're doing so well and they're doing great in AA. And they showed up in my office and they said, you know, we'd like to talk to you. We think we might have a problem with money. And I said, well, tell me about it. And they said, well, it's these credit cards. They seem to be... building up. I said, really? Why don't you tell me about that? And how much money do you owe? And how many credit cards do you have? And she opened her purse and she put a stack of plastic on my desk about like that. And it turns out they were all maxed out. And they had just recently all become maxed out and now they were calling them. And they said, we're getting calls from these credit card companies. I said, really? Why do you think that is? And they said, well, the credit cards are up to their limit and beyond. I said, I can tell that. And I asked them a little bit, tell me about what their situation was. And it turns out they were living in a beautiful townhome in Encino and living on credit cards. They paid their rent on a credit card. They went to the grocery store. They did everything on a credit card. And the reason they did that is they didn't have any money. And the reason they didn't have any, I said, well, what do you do? And she said, well, I'm a realtor. I sell real estate. And he said, and get this, this was a long time ago, and he was a telemarketer for cell phone franchises. This is how long ago this was. You know, cell phones were brand new. He sold franchises for people to sell cell phones on the telephone. There was only one problem. She never actually sold any real estate, and he never sold any franchises. So they lived on credit cards. And I said, well, there's one apparent action you must take immediately. You must get jobs. And this is what got me interested in doing it, their reaction. And he said, well, I'm a professional salesman. And I said, no, you're not. Salesmen are people who sell things and people pay them money. Nobody ever gives you money for anything. And she said, she's a realtor. I said, you've never sold any real estate. And so I said, what you must do is... I said to her, she worked for one of the largest real estate companies in Los Angeles, and I said, you need to go and talk to the owner and tell him that you're not a salesman, that you don't know what you are, but you're not a realtor, and you need some kind of a job, and ask him if he'll give you a job in the office and pay you some money. She said it wouldn't be very much, and I said, well, I've got good news for you. Whatever it is, it's going to be a lot more than you're making now. So get a job. So she got a job as a clerk in John Douglas Realty, and she pretty soon they made her a manager of the newsletter. Well, that's later, but she got a job as a clerk. And this guy, her husband, this young guy, was a big jock. He played ball, and he was a big athlete. And so I got the L.A. Times, and I looked in the ads, and I found a job for him as the assistant manager of a sporting goods store in Los Angeles. And I said, look at this, Brian. This is right up your alley. This is for you. It paid $1,600 a month. And 20 years ago, that wasn't too bad. And I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, I can't take this job. And I said, Brian, why not? He said, I won't be able to make my nut. I added up their income for the last 6 months. It was $700. And I said, Brian, I have marvelous news for you. If you take this job, you're going to increase your income by $1,250 a month. And so what happened was she did what I asked. She took the job as a clerk with John Douglas, and they eventually made her editor of their newsletter, and she generated an income, and they paid her a salary. And a realtor who really liked her took her under her wing, taught her how to sell real estate. She became a successful realtor. But she took direction, and she did the first thing. And Brian took the job as a assistant manager in the sporting goods store, but he didn't want to do it at all. He had a terrible attitude, and he only did it because he was afraid of me. So he took the job. And then he went home and went to bed. You know, he'd get up and go to work sometimes, or he'd show up late, or he wouldn't show up at all. And she, on the other hand, took the job, administrative job with the real estate company, and she made a salary, began to address some of these credit cards. I loaned them some money. They moved out of the townhouse that they were paying a huge amount of money for. I loaned them $700 to rent an apartment in a terrible place in Venice. We call it the projects. But I said, here's where you belong. This is where you belong. This is where your income allows you to live. So they moved in there on the $700 that I loaned them, and they started to set up housekeeping, and Brian did not go to work. The point is, they went in two different directions. She did everything that she was asked to do and that she needed to do to address her problem. She got this job that didn't pay a lot of money, and pretty soon a real estate agent taught her how to be a real estate agent, and she made some money. Brian went to bed, and they went in separate directions. And then eventually, they got divorced. And Brian got drunk. And she learned how to sell real estate. And she made a lot of money. And her parents, and this is serendipity, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. And her parents, who saw what had happened to her and how she had become responsible and grew up, gave her her inheritance and she became wealthy. I didn't get anything, but she became wealthy. And so that's how we started doing, and we began then what is currently known in our group, in our area, as the finance class, which in our group is like, they say it, they whisper it, you have to go to the finance class. And that usually means things are bad. And so alcoholics showing up. Now I'm going to tell you about alcoholics. Alcoholics are children. They're immature. So are Al-Anons, incidentally. We have just as many Al-Anons in the class as we have AAs, so I want to be clear about that. And there is some notion that you and I have about money that is, it's almost as though it's free. Do you know what I mean? It's like, for example, ATMs. That's a magic card that gives you free money. Because largely, people that are in money problems, they don't even record it in their checkbook. They don't subtract it because it's not a check. So it's free. And that's how they use it. I've never seen, we were talking about this earlier at breakfast, alcoholics have this immature, childish approach to checkbooks. It's like you write a check, but you never subtract it from the balance. And they keep meticulous check. Every check is recorded. It's never subtracted from the balance. And the reason for that is, if you know your balance, you can't write the check. And so you don't want to know the balance. Am I right? Do people here identify with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You don't know the balance. So anyway, our finance class started. And what we do is we have now it's grown into this huge. I mean, we have 75 people that meet on Sunday morning in West Los Angeles, and some Sunday mornings, not every Sunday mornings when I'm in town, and we have this class. And all the class really is, everybody gets a teacher that comes in the finance class. Married couples come in as a unit. You're not allowed, if you're married, to keep your money separately in the finance, because that's not marriage. That's roommates with bedroom privileges. Marriage is, you marry everything. You marry the money, you marry the debt, that's marriage. So everybody puts their money together, and married couples come in as a unit, and they get a teacher. And a teacher is somebody who's been through the class and straightened out their finances, and they're now helping somebody else. And that's who the teachers are. And we must have, 50 students and 15 teachers. And I no longer am a teacher. I just pontificate, which is what I do best. And so it all works out wonderful. We like it a lot. And we go through, everybody sees their teacher every week. They go through all of their finances. And we then address, money that you owe is categorized in two ways. One is called fixed expenses. And that's the money that you live on. That's your mortgage, your car payment, your child support, your alimony, whatever it is you have, that is a fixed expense. Secured debt. Unsecured debt. We call those dead horses. And we list them separately. And the idea of the finance class, we address dead horses. We put you on a budget so you can live within your means and your fixed expenses, and then we address dead horses. That's what we do primarily in the finance class. We pay off bad debt, unsecured debt. That includes credit cards, the IRS, which is big in our class, the State Franchise Tax Board, also another popular dead horse, and back child support, back alimony. All of that, yes, and before you ask the question, question and answer, but I'm going to give you the answer now. Yes, you owe the money. All right, let's get that straight. You owe the money. You have to pay it back. And no, you cannot file bankruptcy. Okay, so that's over with. That's not consistent with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bankruptcy is inconsistent. If you filed it already and you come in our finance class, you got to pay it all back. That we take you if you file bankruptcy, but you got to pay it back even though you've bankrupted it. Then, also, my personal favorite is student loans. I really like student loans because there's an idea that people have, alcoholics have, with huge amounts of student loans, is that I shouldn't really have to pay that. You know, it's an education. It ought to be for free, shouldn't it? Yeah, not if I'm paying for it, I'll tell you. And that's who pays for it if you don't. Right-wingers, fascists like me have to pay the bills. So, yes, you owe the money, and you have to pay it back. So that's essentially what we do in the finance class. For married couples, the rule is that once you come into the class and you get a teacher, and the other rule is for everyone, is you must do exactly what we tell you to do. Exactly. If you don't do what your teacher tells you to do, you're out of there. Goodbye. We don't have time. We're not going to debate with you. We're not going to have long, endless discussions about how you feel about it. That is completely irrelevant to us. You must do it. And if you're willing to do it, you get better. Married couples are only allowed to talk about their money once a week, and they can only do it after the teacher gives them permission to do it. The bills are addressed in finance class, and you can discuss it one other time once a week with your spouse. When you do, the requirement is you must sit across from each other at a table, take their hand, and you must each say to each other, I love you. And you then must remember why you got married. Then you can discuss your finances. And when you do, it changes everything. The dynamic is completely changed. You then are no longer adversaries or enemies, you're partners. And you address this together. It's no longer my money and your money, or you did this, or I did this. It is we did this. We did it. We got into this together, and we're going to get out of it together. That's the finance class. Pat's going to tell you some nuts and bolts about checkbooks, and then the fun part of this is we're going to open it for questions, and I'm going to have a lot of fun. Some of you are not, but I am. There you go.
The other debt that Vince didn't mention that that is important is money owed to family members, parents primarily. People usually say, oh, well, my mother loves me. She really wanted me to have that money. She really doesn't need it back. Maybe they do need it back. Maybe they don't need it back. But we feel it's important to pay it back. It doesn't matter if your mother needs it back or not. If she loaned you the money or you ripped it off from her, you know, or she kept bailing you out for all those drunken whatevers. You know, there's something really spiritual that happens when you pay that back. And I should say that we didn't just decide to do this because we're so smart about money. We started doing this because we're not so smart about money. We have made all of the mistakes, pretty much, that everybody in finance class has made, which is why we know what we're talking about, because we've been there. And just specifically about that one, I just want to say, when we had been married not too long, we bought our first house, my father helped us with the down payment. And it was a loan, and we were grateful for it. And no terms were made for the payback. Just, you know, here's the money. Pay it back when you can. And he said, I know, you know, you'll want to be buying some furniture and stuff. So a couple of months went by, and I thought, oh, I should start. I don't remember how much money it was. I think $3,000 or $4,000 or whatever. It was in the thousands of dollars. And so I thought I should pay back, like, in $500 chunks. You know, that sounds like a good. And so I kept waiting for $500 to accumulate so I could send him off the first check, and a couple of years went by. Now, he never said anything about it. He never made any reference to it. As far as I know, he never even thought about it. But it affected our relationship because I thought about it. Every time I talked to him, it was somehow there in the back of my mind, and it just affected our relationship. It finally came to me that I was probably never going to have a $500 chunk of money extra to send to him. So I started sending him, I think it was $25 a month, which just seemed like such a small amount on such a huge debt. The minute I sent the first check off, my relationship with my father changed because I was now doing what I was supposed to be doing. And eventually, of course, we paid the money off. And we didn't, you know, Vince talked about the serendipity, and this is what happens. We've seen it again and again in our lives and in other people's lives. You know, I started sending those $25 checks off regularly, and then pretty soon we started making more money, and then the checks were $50, and every once in a while I could send $100 or $200, and, you know, pretty soon the money was paid off. So I just wanted to say that about family. One of the things when people come into finance class that is universal, we say to somebody, so how much do you think you owe in dead horses? They always guess low. If they say $10,000, you can bet it's $25,000. If they say $100,000, you can bet it's $200,000. I mean, people don't know because they don't want to know. They vaguely know they owe, but they just don't. You don't look at it when you're in that kind of shape. It's just too painful. So here's how it works. Here's the basic. You come in, you make the two lists. Vince talked about your regular monthly expenses and your dead horses. You add up these monthly expenses. You know what you earn. Hopefully you're earning something. And always, these expenses are too much. They're all, never mind the dead horses. The monthly expenses are way beyond, you know, what you're earning. Everybody thinks, if only I made a little more money, I'd be okay. If you're making $20,000 a year, if only I made $25,000, I'd be okay. If you're making $100,000, you know, we have had people in finance class who made $15,000 a year. We've had people in finance class who made well over $1 million a year, and the problem is exactly the same. The figures are different, but proportionately, the problem is exactly the same. And so the answer is, obviously, you need to cut down somewhere on these so-called fixed expenses. We had to do this when Vince had a heart attack 15 years ago, whenever it was. We were making a lot of money, and we were living up to it. And he had a heart attack, and that same year they changed the laws that governed the business he was in at the time, and our income dropped to less than a quarter of what it had been like that overnight. But, of course, our outgo didn't drop to less than a quarter of what it had been. And so we sat down and we looked at our stuff and we thought, God, we got to cut back here. And we, you know, look, okay, we can cut a little bit here, we can cut a little bit here. I mean, we slashed to the bone. I mean, to the bone. And it hurt. And we thought, man, we can't, there's no way we could squeeze a dime more out of this. Well, we cut back three or four times after that, you know, and I'll tell you, each time it got easier. You know, there's something that happens once you get doing this. It almost gets kind of exciting to see where, I know you don't believe that. You're just looking at me like, she out of her mind? It's like when you're a newcomer in AA and they say, this is the best thing that's ever happened to you. It's that same feeling. But anyway, you know, we paid off our debt. Slowly. We paid it off. We owed the IRS a ton of money. We paid it every dime. And what a relief. Anyway, I keep trying to get to the point. You got your two lists and you cut, you know, your finance teacher tells you this is where you got to cut back. One rule of finance classes, you stop using credit cards right now. You just don't use a credit card. Period. That's painful. The other thing is that you don't, we find, Vince, I think, mentioned ATMs. There's something about it that seems like it's not money. So our rule is you can use your ATM once a week to figure out, you know, you need money for your lunches, let's say, during the week, or whatever it is that you're spending your cash on. Figure out how much money that is or how much is in your budget for that. Get that amount of money out once a week, and that's what you have to spend for your lunches or whatever. The money that you put in the basket at the AA meeting, whatever the things are that you spend cash for. We did a little experiment one time, and a friend of ours was we were doing a class, and a friend of ours who has absolutely no financial troubles whatsoever, makes a lot of money, lives well within his means, decided he was going to follow the rules that we were laying out that week just to see, you know, if he could do it. So the thing we had said was no credit cards. So that week he was in a men's clothing store. And he tried on this sport coat, and it just fit like a glove, and it looked beautiful on him. And it was a lot of money, which he could well afford. And so he thought, well, I'm going to get this jacket. So he went up to the counter, and he pulled out his credit card, and then he thought, oh, you know, I said I was going to do, you know, for the week what Vince and Pat said, so I'll write a check for it. And he reached for his checkbook, and he thought, boy, that coat's a lot of money. You know, it hadn't even occurred to him it was a lot of money when he was going to use that credit card, because using a credit card isn't like spending money. You know, it's like free, like Vince said. It just doesn't feel like using money. We were surprised. Another thing we have people do is because there's a lot of what we call leakage that, you know, people say, well, I make X dollars, but I don't know where it all went. And if you look at their expenses on paper, it seems like they should have money left. We're working with a couple right now. He made $200,000 last year, and they have not a dime saved. And they should. You know, they're monthly expenses are just not that high. They should have a lot of money saved, and it's in leakage. So one of the things we have people do is take your, presumably you're writing these things down, take your check register for the last two complete months and add up every single ATM that you withdrew. We were stunned when we found out how much we were drawing out in ATMs, and that's money that's just like gone. It's like just pissed away. We don't know where it is. I mean, yeah, it was some lunches, and yeah, it's some money in the AA basket, but we weren't putting that much money in the AA basket, I can guarantee you, you know. So it's just money that's gone. It's like we just set a match to it. So that's a real good exercise to do to get a handle on where it's going. Everybody has different things that are kind of their weakness that they spend money on. Starbucks coffee seems to be the, you know, I love people come into finance class on Sunday morning with a $10 cup of coffee. I mean, that, to me, that seems insane. But whatever, you know, for me, one of the things that I noticed I was spending money on, and boy, this just didn't seem like anything, is magazines. I mean, so you buy a $2 magazine while you're getting your groceries. That doesn't seem like much. And I added it up over a month. I mean, just added from the magazines that were sitting by the side of my chair that I had bought that month. And it adds up. $2, $4, $5 every time added to your grocery bill adds up over the year. So, you know, there's leakage in places that you've maybe not ever even thought of, that we have never even thought of. Everybody's got a different thing. And so it begins then for the person. One of the rules we have is that you must, as Vince, I think, made reference to it, is balance your checkbook every month. Two things. Write in the, you know, you have $1,000 and you write a check for $100. You write it over here, minus 100. Now you have 900. This is not rocket science, but so many people don't do this. And then, of course, when you get your bank statement, you reconcile your account. I'm amazed at the number of adult people who have never done that. I'm just can't even imagine. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it.
The journal.
Another thing we have people do in the beginning is, again, because of this sort of leakage, is start keeping a journal. Just a little, you know, spiral notebook you can slip in your pocket or your purse and write down everything that you spend. Not the bills that you're, you know, the regular bills that you're paying, but the $2 you put in the basket or the $10 cup of coffee or your lunch, whatever.
The $100 lunch.
Whatever money that you're spending other than your regular fixed expenses. And again, it's amazing to see where, and all of those expenses are generally, except for the $100 lunches, are generally little expenses, $5 here, $10 there, $4 here. It's just astounding, though, at the end of the month to see how much that all adds up to, and in fact adds up to enough to take care of, you know, it's just really interesting. And so once we get the fixed expenses down to, you know, a manageable, sometimes people have to move. Often they're living way beyond their means, or maybe they have to get a roommate if they're a single person or sell a house. We had to sell our house when Vince had his heart attack. We didn't want to do that, you know. I remember thinking, this is so unfair to have to. We help a lot of people in AA. We've had a lot of AA events at our house. We should not have to sell our house. This is so not fair. We work, you know, like it's about me. And we sold the house, and it's not the house. What we have is this. It is our friends. It is all the people that came to parties at our house, and they still love us, whether we have that house or not, and we still love them. And what a relief it was to be out from under, you know, a burden that we could no longer afford to do at that time. And, of course, we thought we'll never live in another house again. And we have, you know, we have. And so, you know, life goes on. Vince said, you know, the really interesting part to us anyway, perhaps not to you, is questions. If you have questions, we really hope that you will stand up and ask them because, you know, we really like to answer questions, specific questions about your own situation or a friend.
Yeah. It always is. As soon as we get somebody that's willing to start, it works.
But it's the first one.
We need one brave soul who's willing to go ahead and start, ask a question or tell us about a problem. And all right, here we go, sir.
It'll probably take too much time. You can say it. We'll try to repeat it.
Hi, Don. My question has to do more with financial amends than it does financial management. And working with a fellow that's my age.
Ask us. Don't talk to them. We'll repeat it. Because
we can't hear you when you're facing that way.
I'm sorry. Yeah. My question has to do with financial amends. I'm sponsoring a fellow who did some destructive vandalism to his boss's property a few years ago. And he has 2 years sobriety, and the suggestion has been to me that it's very evident to me because we've discussed this that he is not ready to face that one. That's over on the right-hand column of amends that I will never make.
I will never make.
My question, it's becoming evident to me that perhaps, you know, the process of making amends is going to take some time, that it's
absolutely
not something that you will complete before step 10. And I just wonder, it's a matter of timing. It's a timing issue for me as to when can I push and how do I judge that?
Okay. Our view is this. If you're in the eighth and ninth step, and you have something as clear as that, that's not an ambiguous amend as something like, I really owe my parents because I, you know, did this or did that or didn't behave well. This is a direct amend. I vandalized this guy's property and I owe him the money. I got news for you. He's ready now. Now. Yeah, go over there and make that amend. Talk to that individual and say, I want to make this right. That's the program. You know, that's where it is. I mean, you don't really get to step 10 before you get through step 9. So, you know, that's a very clear issue to me. I don't know, you know, I guess there are different opinions about everything, but it's that's pretty clear.
Let me tell, this is a little bit off topic, but not entirely. We have a friend in AA who has just one of the most wonderful amend stories. I love this.
Oh,
God. Was like a handyman construction kind of person, came to your house and did work and stuff. And he had, in his drinking, stolen money from a woman whose house he was doing work in, like 20 years ago or 25 years ago or something. And so he was sober and he was, you know, on his amend step. And he had apparently done more than one of these, but this one in particular was a fair amount of money, and he remembered where the house was. And so he, believe me, he didn't want to do this, but he went to the house, and he knocked on the door, and he said to the woman, did you live here in 19-whatever? And she said, yes. He said, well, I don't know if you remember me, but I repainted your kitchen or whatever it was he did, and while I was here, I stole X number of dollars from you. And she started to cry, and she said, I can hardly tell the story. She said, I'm so glad you came. I always thought my son did that. That's why we make amends, you know? That's why we make amends. I love that story, and I love telling
story.
It.
Yeah. It is. Who's next? Yes, come up here, please.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Beth. I know, Beth. I know the problem. We make you grow up.
This is what we know
we do.
You.
Yeah, we know you. We know you very well, Beth. Yeah. You have to grow up.
Yeah.
You're a very sweet, charming young girl, and I can hear that in your voice. You talk that way. Oh, I'm just. You know what? You got to grow up. You got to grow up. You got to pay the money back, and you do it now when you have the money. You're a good guy. I wish I had you in Los Angeles. You'd be great in the class. It's exactly what we deal with.
Having the money in her hand, but having other things maybe that she'd like rather do with it than pay back.
How do I get the discipline to pay the money I owe? You know how you get it? You pay it. You do it. That's how. And you stay away from all of the psychobabble and nonsense that will preclude you from doing it. You listen to no rationalization or you know, notion about why. Oh, I'm Beth. I don't have discipline. Really. Yeah. You do it. You do have discipline. And I'm going to give you my card. I want you to call me and tell me you paid that money back.
Oh, you're in trouble now.
All right? And you'll grow up. And you'll, you know what? Something else. You'll think about yourself in an entirely different way. You'll look at people different. Your head will be up and you'll look them in the eye. And you won't be this little girl that has no discipline. You'll be a strong woman, and that's what the goal is here, right? You just got a good finance class lecture. That's good. All right.
The other thing about that is, you know, when you start, it's getting started that's the hard part.
Yeah.
Once you start, it gets easier and easier because the emotional and spiritual satisfaction or result, whatever you want to call it, doesn't come when every last penny is paid off. It comes well before that. It comes when you're in the process.
Yeah.
Once you've established the pattern where you are sending that check every month to this guy and every month to that guy and every month to the IRS and whomever, once you're, well, and most of the teachers in finance class are not debt-free, but they are well established in their patterns of paying the dead horses and you know, well on the way. Many of them are, but many of them are not. Many of them are not. Yes, George. Hi, George.
These people that have, say, $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in credit card debt, sometimes one way of getting out of it is to refinance the house, pay off all the credit card debt, pull out another $30,000 in cash to buy a new car, and then 2 or 3 years later do the same thing.
Okay. Not in our class.
That's
not going to happen. One of the things we do initially, sometimes consolidating credit card debt is not a bad idea. Sometimes you get a lower interest rate, you can pay it. We don't let you do that initially. Initially, you have to pay it as it is, because that is stark reality. And that brings home the fact that you owe the money and you have to pay it. And then if you establish some kind of a track record, then we can talk about, you know, maybe then you're responsible enough to, but never refinance the house and get 30 grand to go buy a new car. You do that, you're out of there. That's nonsense. But to consolidate credit card debt sometimes is a good thing. And if you get a lower interest rate, you can do that. But only after you've established some discipline and some seriousness about doing it, based on our recommendation, we can be in our class.
Because we think there's something spiritual that happens to, you know, if you've got 10 different credit cards, let's say you owe money on, and you go to consumer credit counselors and they consolidate it all, they call the creditors and get you down to one low monthly payment, whatever, you haven't done much of anything. If you're calling those 10 different creditors yourself and working out, you know, the insane, look, I know I owe you $30,000, I can send you $10 a month, and aren't they happy to hear that? You know,
yeah, they never agree to it.
Yeah, they never agree to it.
But they always cash the check.
Conversations are horrible and painful. Yeah. That's what's going to help you grow in this area, is facing it face on.
It's a spiritual exercise.
It very much so. And just to follow up on that, they never want to accept the amount of money. They always say things like, no, we want the whole thing right now, or, you know, if you can pay us 75%, we'll write off the rest. And, of course, if you had 75%, you would have sent it to them a long time ago.
But if you send them,
you send them the check,
they'll cash it. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
How do you address the emotional spender?
You know, everybody is an emotional spender. She said, how do you address an emotional spender? Everybody in the class is an emotional spender. What you're doing is you're purchasing happiness with money. I feel bad, I'm depressed, or I feel good. And I'm going to buy this, and it's going to make me better. And it makes you better for about 5 minutes. And then you need the next answer. And the next answer. And so you're using money to buy comfort and peace. And you know what? If you can't buy it. You can't purchase it. There's no price on it. And that's one of the things you learn. And that's emotional spending. And how do we remedy it? We make you stop. You stop. You report to your teacher exactly how much you've spent. And we embarrass you and humiliate you.
Vince's personal favorite thing to do.
If we don't get somebody to cry in finance class on Sunday morning, it's a failure. No, I'm only kidding.
Did you have a question, John?
Sure. I have a question. I have a statement. Mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to work with a fair number of people.
Mm-hmm. I know.
In this program. And this is... this is my opinion, is that I think that when it comes to making amends, we'll talk about financial amends, but and making amends, it is my opinion that people quit before the job is finished.
Absolutely.
Yes. I agree completely.
And I came from I got sober in Los Angeles, as you know. Mm-hmm. And the guy that I had for a sponsor, I was living in his basement. And I had a long yellow pad of people that I owed amends to, and then I had people who I owed money to. He had me separate those two. And I said to him, certainly I don't have to pay old bar bills. He said, oh, yes, you do.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very unfair. There was a bar across the street from the Adair Dairy.
Oh, yeah.
I used to drink it. And it burnt to the ground. And I did a little dance because I figured that I didn't have to. He said to me, we've got to find out where those people are. I thought that was going a little too far. But getting back to the idea about financial amends, I think that what we do is we have two lists in our heads. We have that immediate, Clancy talks about this, checks with Peter Bridges. You know, you have some immediate consequences on some money that you owe. And then you don't have kind of moderate consequences. And then you have some, and you talked about it, has no consequences. I think the idea is, and I really appreciate what you two have done, is the idea about it being spiritual, because it's a very freeing kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And I've, you know, the people that I work with in this program, I really try to get us to get to the point where we're free.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Some people have said to me, have you made all of the amends that you had written down on that list? I have to tell you, no, I have not made all the amends. Some of them I haven't been able to find, and I've tried every way that I can. Have I made every financial amend? Yes, I have made every financial. And some of them were really hard.
Yeah.
Because there's kind of a philosophy, as far as I'm concerned, about financial amends. You know, we talk about cash register honesty. You know, that's wonderful. We talk about, you give me change for 50 and I gave you 20. You know, it's easy to be honest. How about $250,000?
Yeah.
You owe $250,000. How do you face that?
We have people who are in the class who are facing that.
Right.
Yeah. Who do? Yeah.
And there's an idea in our minds that we have to pay. You mentioned
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful, about $25 instead of $2,000.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, and you're right, we're children when it comes to this idea. You know, it's like we can't pay it back. $25 a month is too embarrassing.
Yeah.
But that's my point is that I think that people quit before the job is
done. Oh, there's no question. One second, and we're going to get you all. I want to make a point about something John said I forgot. We don't insist that you pay drug dealers back. That's right. We don't do that. We don't let you pay drug dealers back. However, we make you take that money and do something else with it that's helping somebody. That's the requirement.
And preferably anonymously on those kind of things.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time there was a guy in our group who had no teeth, and one of the finance class people who had one of these, you know,
owed a drug dealer money.
Arranged anonymously for this guy to get
all his
dental
work
done.
And that's I don't think drug dealers should get any money. So, you know.
But old bar tabs. Those are
bar tabs are different.
Business
bar
people.
Tabs are different. You got to pay your bar tab, but not drug dealers.
This girl over here had her hand up. Yes, you in the black. Oh well, you're next in the black. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have been if you just sent them a little bit of money. Yeah. That's the point.
And they would have known that I was going to pay.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you.
I'm so glad you said that out loud.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, you and the...
Beth's friend. Let's see if we can get you. If you're 30 days sober, this is not your problem right now. Your problem is to go to meetings and stay sober and get a sponsor. Yeah, they're going to call you. That's part of getting sober, honey. That's they're all after you.
Yeah.
Do you have the money to pay them?
That would be a no.
No. Well, getting a job? Oh, yeah, you should get a job tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The job you should get tomorrow. Who's next? Yes, over there.
Hi, Jenna.
I can't hear.
I
compassion.
And I've gone to him, but he won't let me. Like, he gives me like $20 a week. And it's like, here, that's all you get. You know?
Do you work?
What?
Do you work?
Yeah.
And do you live with your father?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, all right. How old are you?
30.
And you're living at home. Wait a minute. Come up here so I can hear you. I can't hear you back there.
She just got out of rehab.
Okay, that's good. Well, I mean, you're sober. You're 30 years old. Yeah, how long are you sober, honey?
7 months.
7 months. Do you have a job?
Yes.
What kind? How much money do you make?
My salary is $26,000 a year.
$26,000 a year? Okay. Are you able to live on your own?
No.
You can't. That's not enough money for you to get an apartment.
Well, not with all the debt that I have.
Well, what kind of debt do you have? Student loans you have, right?
No.
No. Oh, all right.
I owe the IRS like $15,000.
Okay.
I have like $10,000 in credit card debt.
All right.
I had my car repossessed. Uh-huh. I got it back, and then it got set on fire, so I no longer have that. I owe the bank. I screwed up the bank account a couple thousand dollars.
You're a poster picture for a newcomer in AA. You really are. That's great. You're doing great, honey. You really are. Let me say this to you. Do you have a payment plan with the IRS?
I just started one.
Okay. How much you pay them a month?
I'm gonna pay them $300 a month.
How much?
$300.
$300 a month. All right, that's a lot. I think you can negotiate better with them. That's number one. The best thing you can do. Now you're only just out of rehab and you're only 7 months sober. And I assume you have a sponsor. Yeah. As soon as you can, what you want to do is focus on living on your own and out of the house. That's number one. As soon as you're able to do that.
But, I mean, like my dad's idea is, okay, we're going to erase this debt and then we'll send you
No, you can't let him do that.
And he won't let me touch anything.
Well, you're 30 years old, honey.
I know.
Yeah.
You're a
big girl.
I'm grown.
Yeah, that's right. You have to assume responsibility. You tell Daddy you're going to pay your own debt. All right?
Let me say something about, she mentioned, in case you couldn't hear, that she can't get a bank account because she screwed that up too and owes the bank a couple of $1,000. I sponsor a girl who was 10 years sober before she could get a bank account. Hmm. When she got her paycheck, she went to the bank, she cashed them, she wrote out money orders for everything, rent and everything that was humiliating. It took a lot of time, but that's what she had to do.
Come here. I didn't mean to beat you up, but you got to do this, okay? You can't live with your father. And if you have to stay with him right now and he's helping, you know, parents love children. They want to help them. And they just do. And they, you know, and that's fine. They help you. But your father, at 30 years old, your father can't assume responsibility for you. You're a woman now. You have to assume responsibility for your own life. And you have to tell your father that. You have to sit down in a serious conversation, not Daddy's little girl, but as a woman, and you have to say, I cannot do this. I appreciate your help, and I can accept some of it because I need it. But I can't let you assume responsibility for my life because I'll never get any better. And I'll tell you something else. If you do that, I don't think you'll stay sober either. Okay? It's a lot. You're only 7 months sober. You're just out of rehab. I understand. But you have to think about these
things.
You don't
have to move out this afternoon. Okay,
no.
Don't go home and sit. No.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
I was going to.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But do you get the point?
Yeah.
You have to have a mindset to where your dad is not going to take care of you. You're 30 years old. You need to be a strong woman now. Okay.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
My name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Larry.
Hi. Two questions. One, you said something about negotiations. Insurance company didn't pay. How do you negotiate with them? You know, they call me, they're like, we want, you know, like you said, 75%, we'll wipe it out. And then I'll say, no, we can't do that. What, you know, and then they say, well, we want 300. I said, well, I'll give you 100. You know, if I say that, they're like, no, we're just going to ruin your credit. We're going to, you know.
They're not going to ruin your credit.
You ruined it. There's a question. You have medical insurance?
Yes.
And you had a heart attack? And they wouldn't pay for it?
No, it's his share.
There was large deductibles.
It's his share.
Oh, his deductible.
Didn't because it was due to alcohol.
They can't do that. You have a heart attack, they have to pay for it. They can't say that it's due to alcohol.
It was denied by the insurance company, by
Let me just say, this is just a little point of fact for anybody. I work for an insurance company, so I know these things. When you get, when they reject a claim, always appeal it.
Yeah.
They 90% of the time people don't, and that's of course how they make their money. I'm not trying to put insurance companies down, but if you appeal it, your chances are very good of winning the appeal. But having said that, even though they say no, we won't take $50 a month or whatever, if you write a check for $50 and you send it with a letter saying I acknowledge that, you know, you want this money and this is what I can afford to pay, they will cash the check, and if you send them one every month, you know, it'll be fine.
They'll leave you alone.
Yes, it is. Now, it's not to say that your credit rating is going to be pristine.
Your credit rating will be terrible.
You know,
but you'll be able to satisfy the
once the debt's
the
paid off, then you can reestablish credit. But until it's paid off, you can never reestablish credit.
And the second question is like, when you do have all that debt, and you have, you know, 5 or 6 credit cards, you got the medical, you know, you had a constitution of family, do you, like, pick, like, credit cards 1 month, family the next month?
Let me do this.
Or how do you do it all in 1 month?
Well, somebody else made, I think John maybe made reference to it. There's people that are, like somebody said, that are calling you every day wanting their money. There are people who, you know, it's about to be that way. There's people, maybe you filed bankruptcy way back and they're not even looking for you, you know, but you know you owe the money. There's family members who love you and aren't hounding you for the money. So you have to make, obviously the ones that are, the IRS, you really have to address. If they're after you, you really got to get on that one and make some kind of arrangements. And they are very accommodating to work
very
out payment plans. They really are.
They'll deal with you.
We were surprised at the, we thought that the amount they were going to make us pay was going to be way more than what they arranged for us.
So we owed them a lot of money at the time.
And so you look at the most immediate one, you know, the ones that are hounding at your door first, obviously you have to because they're after you. And then after that, depending on how much money you have to address to debt, I personally think it's kind of nice. If you got a couple of small ones, a couple hundred dollars, and then some 10,000 ones, it's nice to pay off those small ones. We have people write out their list of dead horses and keep that original list. So when you pay one off, you cross it off. And there's something very satisfying about, even when you get discouraged, looking at that list and seeing, well, I have crossed off a few. I'm making progress here.
We used to have what we called redlining ceremonies. When someone paid off a dead horse, we put a big red line through it. And then they came in, and everybody went into huge applause, you know, because somebody had paid off a dead horse. And that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Who's next? Yes, sir. Let me take this one.
Hi, Mike.
I think you have to, it's my opinion. I think you have to go back and tell them you want to pay him back.
The question was, he worked for a company for 30 years, and maybe 2 to 5 of those years he was, you were stealing or you were working and not giving him a day's pay?
Uh-huh. Oh, that's the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Gotcha.
All right.
Gotcha.
You know, I think that's a different issue. You got to deal with it a different way. I mean, there's a lot of people do that. If you didn't physically take money, maybe the amend you make is to be a good employee now if you're working. And maybe that's the amend you make. And maybe you can go do volunteer. Somebody said volunteer work, and it's not a bad idea. You know, there are other ways to make amends, and that might be a good way to do it. To tell you about telling money back, let me tell you about my when I was new, I had a terrible time. You'll hear about it tonight. I mean, it was just, it'll make you cry. It was so bad. But much worse than any of you.
Yeah.
And I had this Nazi sponsor in Los Angeles who... I had lost my medical license. I got it back, and I went back to work in this emergency room. And I didn't even have a car. I didn't have a driver's license. I had to take the bus, and and I couldn't have a checking account. I was, and I had to get my paycheck. I was the only medical professional you ever knew how to get your paycheck and get on a bus and go up to this mission where the sponsor was so we could walk up to the bank, cash the check, get money orders, go back and sit in his office and try to figure out who ought to get what, which was, it was a huge amount of debt. And, you know, everybody, and he was disorganized, and he'd be talking to people on the phone, spilling coffee all over the money orders. And I would think, what the hell? He doesn't know. What does he know? You know, this guy doesn't know. Christ, he can't even keep his desk clean. But he did. And I ended up paying everything back. And I paid people back that I had worked for money, but that was money I had taken, not work that I. So I think it's a different issue. And I think that the suggestions here were excellent. I think that if you're a good employee now, if you're working, and you get a chance to. I did work for a lot of people, and I didn't do a lot of work, and I got by because I just fancied myself as being so brilliant I could just do this, not do the work, and get the credit. But I have a job now. It's very interesting. I work very hard now. I give them, I give them everything I have. And I didn't realize I was really doing that until it was pointed out to me that I worry about it, I do it, I'm really responsible. And I think when you do that, it's kind of an amend, in many ways. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
What's your recommendation when the alcoholic is trying to make the financial amends and get their financial house in order? The spouse is not with the program on the financial amends.
That's a big problem. I think if you're married and your spouse, and this is wreckage of your past before you got married?
No.
While you're married? She's responsible too. She marries you, you all did it together, right?
But he's just saying the spouse is not interested in participating. It is difficult. Well, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it is. It's a big problem.
There's no easy answer to that.
No. It is a big problem. Wish we had a better answer, but we don't.
I just want to tell one little story, and then we'll stop. I promise we'll stop. Yeah. Actually, two little stories. No one. Enough's enough. When we were talking about stealing from employers, when I was drinking, one of my first jobs was for JCPenney Company.
Oh, this is great.
And I worked in the credit layaway department, which meant that a fair amount of cash came through there because also the gift wrap department. So people would pay cash for their gift wrap or come in and make cash payments on their layaway. And so this was
45 years ago.
Yeah, now 45 years ago. It's a long time ago. And so I was sober about 15 years, maybe. I'm sorry to say I waited that long, maybe even longer. And I was at a meeting one night talking on amends, and it was like this. People asked questions, and somebody asked the question, did you ever steal from an employer or a store? And I said, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I worked for JCPenney. I stole money and blah, blah, blah. And the person said, how did you pay it back? And I said, well, I just wrote a check and paid it back. Now, the whole story was true except the last part. I'd never actually written a check or paid it back. Now, I'm standing at an AA podium, and I've just told this huge lie. And I'll tell you, I started to sweat. And then the guy asked, a follow-up question, so I elaborated on my lie a little bit. I go home, and I say to Vince, oh, man, I just did the most terrible thing. I just told this awful lie from the podium, and I elaborated on it. I thought I'd get, some sympathy. He said something like, Jesus Christ, Pat, what's wrong with you? Or something loving like that. So the next morning, I thought, I got to take care of this. So the next morning, I called JCPenney Company at the store that I'd worked at, and the receptionist answers, and I say, may I speak to the store manager, please? And she said, may I tell him what this is regarding? Well, 35 years ago, or whatever it was at the time, 35 years ago, I worked for your store, and I stole some money, and I'd like to arrange to pay it back. And she said, one moment, please. No reaction whatsoever. One moment, please. So I get the manager on the phone, and I give him my little spiel again, and I said, I'm wondering how I would go about paying that back. And he said, well, you could just write a check and send it to my attention so I know, what it is. And he hung up, no thank you again or anything. And so I didn't know exactly how much money it was because I had taken it in little bits and pieces. But I prayed about it and thought about it, and I came up with a figure that I knew was enough and then some, a figure that I was really comfortable was more than what it was. And so I wrote a check, and I wrote a letter, again, sort of reiterating what I'd said on the phone, you know, that a 35-year blah, blah, blah. And I thought maybe I'd hear something back from these people or something, like a thank you. Why would they thank me? It's like 35 years later, I'm paying them whatever. I never heard from them. Now, I thought once I sent that letter and that check off, it would be like, whew, that's done. You know, thank God. Well, it was, except almost 6 months to the day that I had told that lie at that podium, that same meeting called me and said, could you come down and talk? It was a step meeting, you know, different step every week. And I said, sure. And so we booked a date. And he said, oh, that would be on amends. And I said, gosh, I talked about that last time I was there. Wouldn't you rather hear me talk about something else this time? And he said, oh, no, we love to hear you talk about amends. So I had to go to this meeting where there are old-timers in the room who I greatly admire and respect and certainly would like to them to like me and approve of me. And I had to stand at the podium and say, you know, 6 months ago I was at this meeting and I told a terrible lie and I got to straighten it out here. And this is what I did. It was so humiliating, but I am so glad I did it. So glad.
I'm ashamed of her for that. I must tell you, I really am.
I think this meeting's over now.
Yeah. I want to say one other thing about amends to families. There's a very cloudy issue. Your family loves you, and to this girl, where is she? She must have left.
That, she ran crying from the room.
No, your family loves you. My family put me through college. I mean, that's what they do for you. It's what people do for kids. There's no doubt about that. So there has to be a line drawn between what they're giving you as parents and what they loan you. If it's a loan, you owe the money. You need to pay it back. Even if they say, well, you're an AA now and we're so happy and we're so happy you're doing well and your life is straightening out, forget it. You can't forget it. You got to pay it back. And the best story about that I know in AA is my friend Sharon Barker, who talks about she owed her father a lot of money and she had a terrible relationship with her father. I mean, bad. She was a hippie growing up and, you know, just gave him, drove him crazy, and he bailed her out of jail, loaned her money, didn't give it to her, and she never paid him back, and she got sober, and the sponsor said to her, you got to pay him back. You have to call him and ask him how much it is, and you have to make arrangements to pay him. And she said, oh, he doesn't remember how much it is. It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, she said, I'll call him. So she called him and asked him, and he said, oh, yes, I have it right here. And he had the exact amount. My dad says, yeah, here's what you owe me. And so she made an arrangement to send him the money. And her sponsor said, not only do you send him the money every month, a payment every month, but you send him a note with that payment, and you tell him how you're doing. And you send him a check. And she did. And she did it for a couple of years. And then finally, one Christmas time, 1 year, she sent him a check with the note, and she got a call from him on the phone. He said, Sharon, I don't need any more checks, but keep sending the notes. And that's AA. Thank you very much.